Hey everyone, what's up? It's Austin. If this audio sounds weird, it's because it is. I'm recording this on my phone in a parking lot in the middle of the desert. I'm in this small town called Tickaboo in Utah. I'm still shooting that movie that I said I was shooting a couple episodes ago. Still shooting the movie. Now we're in the middle of the desert in a small town with no service and a shared Wi-Fi signal for everyone that is in the town. That's how they do it in these small little desert oasis towns. It's one Wi-Fi signal that everyone shares, so I think right now there's more people in Tickaboo than are ever here at one time, at any point in the year, I think because of our movie. And we're all sharing the same guest Wi-Fi signal. I was gonna record the intro to this episode while I was down here in my free time, and I forgot my microphone. I left my recording equipment at my parents' house in Sandy, Utah. So I'm gonna be down here till the middle of the week, so I just figured, whatever. I'll just record it on my phone. Because, you know, I think Chrissy Bear over at Marmalade Music, who mixes and masters our show, I think he's had it a little easy, you know, and I think I haven't challenged him lately. And he's always talking a big game and talking about how he's getting a lot better at mixing and mastering and at being an audio engineer. And I kind of want to put that to the test and see if he can make this phone audio sound decent for you. So, you know, challenge is on, Chris. Let's see what you can do, you know? I'm excited, though, about this episode and about this guest, and I think it is fitting that I'm recording this intro on a movie set in the middle of the desert, because I'm going to be talking to my friend Chase, my actor, producer, director, writer, wearer of many hats friend Chase Ramsey, veteran of the Broadway stage, a dude who had his own TV show that he was the host of, a guy who has run and operated his own theater company, who currently runs and operates a production company in Utah that makes movies. This guy does it all. He is a show businessman of the highest regard, and I'm happy to be friends with him, happy to be collaborating with him. You'll hear in this interview, he drops this big bomb on me. We've had this little project in the works where I kind of pitched him a script. I pitched his production company this idea, and he said he'd meet with his people and let me know what they said. And then we recorded this episode, and he hadn't told me what they said, and I assumed they had said no, and he just didn't want to bring it up. So I was like, I'm not going to ask, because if he's not going to say anything, I don't want to know. And then in this episode, he's like, oh yeah, and we're doing that thing. They said yes. So we're moving forward, at least, into the beginning stages of the thing. I'm not going to talk too much about what the thing is, because it's still, like, early, early stages, and it's still just, like, we're going to do some conceptual, rough drafting of it. But it's cool, it's exciting, and we are talking today about the ups and downs, the ins and outs, the peaks and valleys of this crazy, insane thing that we do, this business we call show. And the people who work in it. It is such a wild business, you guys. I talk a lot about so many different things on this podcast, and I usually have guests on to talk to me about what it is that they do. And it's kind of weird that I haven't talked about what it is that I do yet. I mean, I've talked about music, and that's an aspect of what I do for sure. And I've had a lot of friends on who are actors and writers and different people in different areas of show business, but I've never actually just talked about show business itself as a whole and my relationship to it, and kind of what it does to you psychologically and the hustle and everything that you have to do in order to stay active in this career. So this is what we're talking about today. It's really interesting being out here on this movie set. Movie and theater people, film and theater people are so different. They're such different breeds. Truly, there's such a big diversity of the kinds of people that you meet on a film set, and also when you're working on a show at a theater. I think the major crossover between the two kinds of people are the actors. The actors are the ones that spend the most time in both mediums, I think. I think so. Maybe the writers? Maybe the directors? Maybe? But as far as the technical people are concerned, it seems to me that usually theater technicians work in theater and film technicians work in film. But yeah, as is the case with my guest Chase today, we both have done many, many theatrical productions in our lives, and we've both been on quite a few film sets. So yeah, we're going to get into it. We're going to break it down. So I guess that's it. So from not a Blanket Fort recording studio in not a one-bedroom apartment, we recorded this at Chase's home, his new home in Utah County. He's in a Broadway show currently under contract, but as you know, Broadway's not running, so he actually moved home to Utah to just do some work while he's waiting for Broadway to reopen. So yeah, from there, from his home, and from my car in the middle of Tickaboo, Utah, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking with my guest and good friend Chase Ramsey about The Biz.
Like show business, like no business I know. Everything about it is appealing. Everything the traffic.
So here we are. I'm on Frankenstein sleep. You ever Frankenstein sleep where you like have to like kind of like piece together like 20 minutes here, 15 minutes there, 2 hours here.
I hear that it's actually worse for you.
It feels worse. It
having an infant, like a baby, that's what that is.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I've ever woken up in the middle of the night. My wife is.
That's the wife's job,
I'm
right?
An idiot. I'm the worst. But awful. You're doing really well. You're sitting here. You're acting like a person.
Yeah.
I do not do this well with no sleep.
I'm definitely I'm in that loopy state, you know, where you're like. Not sure if you like remember to bring things with you. I was driving here and I was like, did I remember my laptop? And I was like, yeah, I think so. I was like, I don't remember packing it, but surely I did.
It's gotta be somewhere. Yeah, but also you're sitting here and your words are almost ahead of you. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, you know, you're just feeling like you're behind it all.
Yeah.
That's not how you look though. You look princely.
Thank
put
God.
Together. Very handsome. You look like you've had a lot of sleep, so you tricked me.
Good. And then there's the question of what do I do after we're done and I go home? Do I try to like go like big nap, like 3-4 hour long nap, and then like risk losing my sleep tonight? Or do I like push through and try to have like a big crash at the end of the day?
See, that's such an adult thing to do. I haven't yet accomplished that idea of like, oh, I should wait until at least 8 so that I... No, I think we're actors. It's just kind of like you sleep when you can. And
yeah.
If you're tired, you take care of it. You know what I mean?
That is the nice thing about not having a 9-to-5 is that you do just sort of go like, no, I'm not going to like... judge myself for taking a midday nap if I have the time for it and if I need it. Although I still do.
Yeah, well, the rules of society have been set and we must obey them.
Yeah, because I have to accomplish at least 1,000 productive things every day.
Correct.
Otherwise, I'm a awful failure who's not good at life.
At least you know that. Uh-huh. But before coronavirus, it was actually 2,000, and now it's only 1,000.
Yeah, we've been Corona's been cutting us some slack. I actually feel the opposite though, because since I got furloughed from my day job, I feel even more like, well, I'm just sitting at the apartment doing nothing. I have no excuse not to write 6 plays and get at least 2 movies produced and like have, you know, like...
Dude, which is crazy. I'm the same exact way, which is probably actually why we have found some version of success in this thing, because the hustle, the idea of sitting down is scary as hell.
Yeah.
So we have to keep going. I'm finding lately though, the whole 6 play, 2 movie thing is like... I'm really good at writing 6 mediocre plays. I haven't written one that is actually good. You know what I mean? And I'm like trying to hone in that like, I've got to write 1 good play someday. So maybe I should.
Says you. says you that you haven't written a good play.
I don't know.
Like, that's such a you thing to say.
Well, you haven't read the play, so.
Yeah, so speaking of the hustle and doing a million things every day and writing a million plays, you're the most prolific and busy person I've ever met. First of all, well, before we get into this, I need to say, like, who are you? Because I know that you told me once when we worked together, but I'm like, yeah, he's like from Utah and he just is always working. And we did a play together and I was like, that guy's really good. And you were like, even when we met then, you were like, I own a theater company. I do this, this, and this. And I was like, wow.
Just bragging about all of my accomplishments.
You were just saying what it is that you do.
Oh, man.
But you're the least braggadocious person I've ever met. And you just say, like, oh, I'm doing this, this, and this. And it's like, and then you're always like, but I wish I was doing what you're doing. Or you're always like, I just am friends with people who are talented, and that's why I'm doing these things. And
those are both true things. And I will say I do wish that I was doing what you were doing. There's a part of me, my soul, oh, and then I'm going to say who I am, but there's a part of me who thinks that I'm Tom Hardy and wishes that I was Tom Hardy. And so the fact that I'm James Corden is tough sometimes. You know, it's like, I know that I'm going to get a job being a Today Show host before I am going to book
a villain in a Batman movie.
Exactly.
Who's like, and jacked.
And so we're going Bane. Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. And so, you know, like seeing what you've done with your career, you've been able to play some real like dramatic stuff. I just, no one will see me for that, you know? And I do a lot of self-tapes for a lot of good stuff and don't book them. So yeah, I've gotten this role on Broadway and you know, did the food show and stuff, done some things that like equal success, but it is sort of like success to who, you know, a lot of times for sure, because then I look in the mirror and I go, oh yeah, I've got to remember you're that person.
To me, success to me, Chase.
Okay, good.
Yeah, you know, I went in for Cunningham when I lived in New York, and the casting director said, you're in here for who? And I said, Cunningham, and they said, why? And I said, that's what my agent sent me for. And
that's,
I said,
incredible.
Okay.
You would have been great.
I feel like I gave them a unique read. I was like, dude, I'm gonna give you guys something else.
And the only danger is that a show that's been running for 9 years, they know what works.
Yeah.
Which is funny because also, maybe I just booked that role because I'm a chubby, funny person. You know what I mean? And like, the role is the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Don't get me wrong. Not everyone can do the role.
However, it takes big time chops.
It's insane. And I miss how insane it is.
Yeah.
I miss doing hard things. However, it is right place, right time. It truly is.
Sure, of course, you know, it always is.
And so I'm Chase Ramsey.
Yeah.
Who am I? I'm from Utah.
Who the hell are you?
Yeah, dude. I know. I don't know yet, actually. I'm from Utah. I went to Mountain View High School. I graduated from Utah Valley University with a BS in theater, which has never come up in my entire career. Mm-hmm. I think when I directed for Disney theme parks for a year. That's the only time that a job has ever asked. But directing for regional theater, no one cared. Acting, no one cares. Not to say you shouldn't get a degree, because I learned a lot. I got to work with Dave Tinney, who is known as a great around these parts, and he really is just incredible. But yeah, I think... And now I have a family, and I have three boys, and I'm married to my wife, Janessa, and just found out 2 days ago that Broadway isn't opening until May 2021 or June.
You were
really
expecting to go back in January.
January was the last word we heard.
As we said, you're a Broadway thespian.
Thespian.
You
actor.
Are a seasoned veteran of the Broadway stage.
Right. Yeah.
You play in the Broadway golf tournament.
I do. Oh, man. Which is actually probably the best part of Broadway. Uh-huh. I love it. Yeah, but so now just teaching at Utah Valley University, trying to find as many jobs as possible. Honestly, this is the best time in the world, in my opinion. And it's the scariest thing ever because I am all about the hustle. And we can get into why I hustle so much for sure. That's a deep dark hole.
Yeah, I want to know what's going on in your brain. I want to know what Why? Makes your motor go so ferociously.
Man, I mean, other than the fact that I am a, my love language, I found out from Janessa, is the way that I receive love is through accomplishments. Mm. In other words, it's a really lonely life. Mm. And I've realized this recently.
I know nothing about that. Yeah.
God bless you. I mean, seriously.
I 100% always need validation, and I need people to tell me that what I did was good, and that's why I'm constantly going to my partner and going, look at this song. Look at this. Did you hear the podcast this week? Did you?
Right.
Yeah.
And which means that real love, the actual love that we have in front of us, our actual human beings, isn't received as greatly as that other version, which is insane because we truly don't need the love from achievement. We have all the love that we need. We just don't translate it as love.
Yeah.
Mine comes from being, at one time in my life, being homeless and abandoned as a young man in high school and having to like figure out how to live, like
tell
how
me
to
about
find
this.
Food. Well, that's pretty much it. Without slandering anyone in my life, because those things have been mended, my parents weren't really in the place to look after us, my family, and so they made choices. And obviously, they were in a place that was detrimental, but it was sort of like, at one point, it was like foster care or to go live with your friends, you know? So I definitely spent nights at Walmart, behind the toilet paper rolls, all that crazy stuff. And what it, I mean, I owe a lot to that in a way, because what it taught me was that you have to hustle. There are no rules. The other side of this coin is that as a male, as a straight male, I didn't have anyone telling me that I couldn't. That's the other thing. Caucasian straight male from Utah, the whole system was built for me. So
if anything, they're always telling you that you should and that you owe it to yourself to do it, and that like if you don't do it, like
there's some other pressures. Right. Of course, like the whole mission thing too, a lot of Mormons around here. So if you don't go on a mission, then you're then that equals this and all that stuff. However, I was never told that I couldn't like kill it and follow my dreams and nail it. So I have that in my brain still to this day.
Sure.
If I need something, first of all, I know that if I need to find food, I just have to go find it.
Yep.
So all of these rules that people put in place of like, oh, I can't send an email to someone I don't know and like reach out to them. I never thought that. I think like, oh, I'm starving, so I can send an email. Who cares?
Yeah.
What's the person going to say? No, I don't have a job for you, or no, I'm not interested in your type. Or,
right.
You know, but the best thing that could happen is that they go, oh, yeah, I have a movie, you know. So just learn to push really hard because I didn't have a place to sleep.
Yeah, you know, for a long time. Crazy. I didn't know that. See, this is stuff I didn't know. See, this is where I'm like, I don't know if I ever heard that from you when we talked, when we did.
That's probably a good thing. I don't want to wear that on my shoulder. What I do want to make sure is that history doesn't repeat itself. That my humans always have a place, you know? And those same people that did that to me before, sorry, I'm bouncing.
No, you're good.
Bouncing. Those same people, you know, my parents growing up have changed, and a lot of things have been mended, and they are trying to be better. They've recognized their faults, things like that.
Yeah, parents are people.
Parents are people too.
Yeah.
Except for when they're not.
Yeah, you know, that I find that stuff very fascinating. I know that you obviously don't want that to be the thing that defines you. Formerly homeless Chase Ramsey, who like it's like it's not that, but
Tyler Perry does it.
But what's fascinating about it is it just goes into the psyche of like you hear these stories all the time of people who live in their car in Hollywood and who you know like and they're always inspiring stories.
100%. I love those stories.
It shows where the hunger comes from and where. For me, it's like, honestly, I'm like, I think that like my privilege and my comfort raising me has like deteriorated some of my ability to deal with adversity. You know, I get a little bit 100%. Of friction and I shut down and that's why I spent years like talking about ideas with people in bars instead of actually going out and doing them, because the doing of them is so scary. Because it's like, well, what if I fail? What if I go out and I put my idea in front of someone and they say, no, I don't like this? And I just can't handle that.
That puts value on you as a human being. Yeah. It's not just the idea. It actually belongs to you as a person.
And I'm safe in this bar just telling another person on a bar stool this idea. And we're going, wouldn't that be such a good movie? Or blah, 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 blah. And it's living in my brain and it's so fun and it's such a fun fantasy. But the actual doing of it, I feel like everything that's happened in my career has just sort of like happened to me. Like, I don't go out and make things happen. People just call up and are like, hey, do you want to do this? And I'm like, oh, thank God. I was sitting around doing nothing. And then you called.
You are the most blessed person on this planet. That's not totally how it works. And if I were teaching an acting class right now,
you would say, I would say, don't do that.
Do not listen to anything that he just said. He is blessed. However, what I will say is there's like an authenticity about you that everyone that I know, including myself, is in awe of. That you just... you don't know how to lie. You know what I mean? You're just like exactly you in every room that you walk into. And like, so how could you not show up on set or with an idea and convince people? It's like so earnest. It's so real. Whereas a lot of my career, I feel like, has been the opposite. I'm like trying to BS my way into rooms, you know, and hopefully I've done a good job in those rooms. However, it's like so much better when I know, like you sending me a scene recently. You wrote something. I said, send it to me.
Yeah.
I don't always want people to send me their stuff. Just know for sure. Same as you, I assume. But I knew before I even read it, I was like, well, this is going to be good. Because Austin's point of view, his POV is so genuine. How could it not come out on the page? I like... and I think that's how people feel, is it's like, oh, Austin is going to give a good performance. I don't need him to audition.
I mean, I was a hell of a liar for a long time in my adult life. All of my family is like, I didn't know that you had a drug problem or an alcohol problem. And I'm like,
okay,
well, I did a really good job of making sure that you didn't know and make, you know.
Well, and so, and I will say that maybe that is why you didn't learn to lie about the other things.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like the very human parts of you weren't a lie. In fact, it is very human of you to try and conceal your addictions from people, you know, like a kid.
Well, definitely, I got very obsessed with like brutal honesty, especially when I left the Mormon church. I got very obsessed with just being like, I always want to tell people the truth about things, unless they're things that are like so secret that I can't even tell myself the truth about them.
Of course.
Where it's like, I think the reason why I lied about being an alcoholic is like, I was lying to myself about it. So it's like, I wasn't even in a space where I was like, no one can know that I have this bad problem with drinking. You know?
Well, the crazy thing about that is that like, that is the definition of like a good scene, is that you have a secret that isn't a secret, but it is, it's like that under, it's the subtext that is beneath the subtext.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone early on in my career, like I was a kid in Utah, taught this idea about when you walk into an audition or you walk into a scene, you should always have a secret. And the secret for me, he said this, I remember this as a kid, he said, is that I'm always wearing pink underwear. And I thought as a kid, I was like, ah, that's so good. Pink, you know what I mean? Like as a kid. But that's kind of what this is. You know what I mean? And so
the secret for me is that I'm always holding in a burgeoning panic attack. That's the secret. That's good that they don't know.
That's good theater.
That I'm just hanging on to my nerves. And there's like a closet door that they're trying to open up. And I'm sort of just holding the door going, hey, everybody. I'm Austin Archer.
Just so everyone knows out there, he is convulsing on a chair. It's incredible.
How are you guys doing? Oh, cool. I don't care if I get the job or not. It's fine. That's my secret.
Well, it's working.
And a few times in my career, I didn't manage to hold it in and it came out. And I was like, and I had the panic attack in the room in front of everyone. And I had to go like, I'm sorry. I have to leave now. And... good luck in your talent search for this project. I will.
And you didn't get it.
Didn't get it. No, I had to send an apology letter to a friend of mine who brought me in for a show once because I had a panic attack in her room. And I was like, I'm so sorry, Jen. We can pause if you need to pause.
I am putting some air conditioning on because we're sweating in here.
Yeah.
Are you sweating?
Yeah, I'm going to take my sweatshirt off. We'll pause.
That's incredible, dude. I am so sorry, Jen.
You sent me in here. Like, you, like, gave me this opportunity, and I just freaked out. I just lost my cool. No, but yeah, that's another thing that's gone away in my life that I never thought would go away is, like, my panic attacks are almost all the way gone. This year was bad for them. Yeah, I used to have, like, daily panic attacks, and they are, like, gone.
Because of the alcohol.
Yeah, because I was always, like, in withdrawal. And, like, I was always, wake up every day with, like, brutal dehydration and, like, insane headache and stomach ache, and then have to, like, get to work on the train and being, like, holding it together and, like, feeling like I'm gonna vomit the entire time, and then, like, showing up to work and having to, like, be cool while I'm, like, shaking from withdrawals, like, daily panic attacks, like, you know, just, like, awful. That's awful state horrible. Of living. Yeah. And so to
were
have
you
that,
with anybody at the time, like, were you dating anyone? Were
no,
you,
thank God. I mean, I dated people through my alcoholism.
This is a good thing you weren't.
When I was in New York at, like, the peak of it, I was single, and I was just, like sleeping around and just being a mess. And I was talking to someone the other night about that, who was like, yeah, it's weird when you're a mess like that, like, you tend to attract a lot of messy people. And I was like, yeah. I was seeing a lot of messy people. I saw actually a lot of, like, really great people, because, again, I was really good at lying and pretending like I wasn't a mess. And I felt bad for those people who, like, dated me at that time and, like, were like, what's your deal, man? Like, I'm like, I'm a catch and you should be interested in me, but I'm just, like, miserable and, like, can't get interested in anything. And,
yeah, you can't take care of someone else if you can't.
I can't show affection for someone else if I'm, like, actively, like, I just despise myself.
Gosh.
And, you know, so.
And in New York, this happened in New York City.
Yeah, which is a terrible place to be an alcoholic. Bars are open till 4 a.m.
There's alcohol everywhere, and
you don't have to drive.
Yeah.
You take the train home.
100%. There's no reason not to do it.
It's a terrible place. It's also a great place to get sober. New York AA is the shit. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, New York AA is.
That's incredible.
Yeah, saved my life, and I love those guys, and I still, you know, my sponsors in New York, and
so. Why did you go to LA? What changed your mind?
You know what? We're interviewing you, Chase. Okay.
wait a minute.
I do think it was just, like, New York was not unfolding the way that I had wanted it to, and that was 100%. Yeah, okay. It was 100% on me. It was like I was very sick while I was there, and I just, like, wasn't doing the work in the way that I should have been, and I did some things while I was there that were cool, and, like, I, like, did a couple shows and, like, did a TV show and like had some plays produced and stuff. Like, there was, like, some stuff. Released an album that I'm still really proud of.
Yeah.
But, like, overall, I just think I needed a change of scenery and a change of pace, and, like, I needed to sort of, even though they really recommend that in your first couple of years of sobriety you don't do that, like, don't move, don't start a new relationship. Wow. I did both those things. I got right into a relationship and I moved twice to different cities.
But it's working for you. It's
so far I'm all right, you know. Like 850 days in or whatever it is.
Totally. Also, it does feel like, I mean, and I haven't gone through the program, but it feels like when you shed the sickness, it kind of belongs where you shed it, in a way. So for me, I'm like, oh, see, when I need to get rid of something, then I want to leave it. It's like you can't taint your own home with horrible sickness and then just live on top of your sickness in a way.
Yeah, it's kind of like people leaving a house after a divorce, like being like,
right,
I got the house in the divorce, but I don't want to live here because this is, like, where...
This is where it happened.
Yeah.
All, like, the memories are here, all the things.
Yeah.
So.
And I get why the program tells people not to move in the first year, because it's just, like, avoid big changes because you're dealing with enough.
Totally.
Trying to, like...
It's going to add another thing, another reason to drink.
So I get why. Yeah. But definitely there was that where I was like, I just need to try something different.
Start
I need
over.
To try, like, sunny weather and you know, just see about something else. Because I was also, like, thinking of just, like, quitting. I was also just like, maybe I'll just go back to Salt Lake. And I thought, well, before I do that, let's try LA for a few years.
If you had quit, it would have gotten to me and I would have come and beat the crap out of you. You know what I mean? I would have physically, even though I'm very much not an intimidating person, I've never really hurt anyone ever. I would have.
Okay, so
absolutely,
let's okay.
physically attacked you.
So that, though, let's get back on you, because I want to talk about this. Do you ever feel that? Do you ever feel that pressure that keeps you motivated and that keeps you working, that, like, there's people in your life that have told you, you've got to do this? Like, if anyone's supposed to do this, it's you. And that you feel like you owe it to those people to, like, make sure that you're, like, that you don't quit and that you keep going and that you keep, like, trying to find the next project. Do you feel, like, a responsibility to people like that?
I don't think so.
Really?
I don't think there's a single person in my life. That's so interesting that you asked that, and I don't think I've asked myself that. I actually don't think there's a single person in my life that is constantly saying, like, you were born to do this or anything. And my best friend and the person I'm around the most is Janessa.
Uh-huh.
I think that her view of our life together, which is this is the best thing that's ever happened to me, is that she's trying to keep our life together.
Yeah.
So when it comes to my career, I think that she's constantly taking a step back and going, well, what do you want to do? And I'll help you do it, as opposed to, like, putting pressure on it.
Right.
Which
right.
is a beautiful thing
right.
for me, in the sense of I already put enough pressure on myself. I think the biggest thing is that I learned a long time ago that this is the thing that I'm good at. And I've tried to do other things along the road, and I'm so bad at them in multiple senses. One, I'm just not very good at being miserable.
Yeah.
I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
And my friend Jake Swazzo said to me one time, we were both working at BlendTech like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Like temp jobs at BlendTech, which is a blender company. Terrible job.
That sounds incredible.
It's a terrible job.
Yeah.
But my friend Jake Swazzo, who's also an actor, really great actor, I looked at him across the table at lunch one day, and he's happy. He's like chatting with someone. And I had that moment where I was so miserable. I go, Jake, how are you happy right now? I'm miserable. And Jake said, some people are better being miserable than others. That's what
making the best of it, just going like, well, this is what it is.
This is. It is what it is. I don't really have that in me.
Yeah.
And it's sort of the FOMO thing.
Mm.
It's the love for the art and the FOMO on top of it.
Like, so much FOMO.
Like right now, even you're filming this movie, and I know you're filming this movie, and I'm like, gosh, I needed to get on that movie. I need to be a part of that with you. You know, because
aren't you shooting
a
series right now?
Yeah, but it's
yeah, but
dude, it's not, you know. But there's that thing. It's like I have to be a part of that, and I think it comes down to like realizing how hard it is. It's so hard. Now, of course, there are people. What I've learned is once you're on Broadway, the people who are involved in theater and like see Broadway as the big thing, which it is. Broadway is one of the biggest things you can do as a theater actor, you know?
That and like West End and like that's it, man.
Those are the big things.
Yeah.
And so there is that element of like, man, you made it. Like, how is it? It's incredible. When you're inside of it, what's so interesting about all of it is the acting's really great. And other than that, it's a great job. You know, it's not like, it doesn't feel like the stars are twinkling for you. You know what I mean? And I wonder if Dwayne Johnson feels that way on all of the sets of these giant movies that he's doing, or
maybe he did at some point, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe he did at some point, but
the sparkle goes away.
I gotta imagine
to
8 shows a week for 2 years.
It's like
maybe the first couple months you're like pinching yourself, and then after a bit you're like, cool, I'm just at work.
Totally.
Yeah.
And there's the other layer to that where having a family and kids, I don't know if I had time to feel that way.
Yeah.
I feel like because it was like, oh, I have to move my family to New York. Here we go. This is a big adventure. Are we making enough money? Is it, how's the contract? How's this? It didn't feel like I was right out of college and it's like, oh my gosh, I made it. It was more like, it's time to act. Let's, you know.
Okay, how does this happen? Tell me about the Broadway thing, because so I get that. I get that things become a job. I mean, like I said, like last night, like I was just at work and I was like, and I was annoyed that I was there till 6:30 in the morning,
right.
Even though I'm like, I love
this
being
so
on set.
Awesome.
I love making movies.
Mm-hmm.
I love, but like, you know, 4 a.m. rolls around and I'm like, let's just do this little stunt shot so I can go home and get this harness off. But so I get it, how work is work. But tell me about the process of this happening, because it is, to me, one of the top things that I could ever hope to achieve in my life is performing on a Broadway stage. I went to New York to perform regionally, and like with the hopes that like maybe after enough years I'll like find myself in the ensemble of a show or something on Broadway. I found out pretty quick, like, I'm not going to be on the ensemble. I'm not a good enough dancer. So if I'm going to be on Broadway, it's going to need to be...
Also, you're too good of an actor. But it's, that's the other thing.
But it's, yeah, it's yeah. like, I'm going to have to play, like, a character role in, like, a play or something. Mm-hmm. And those are tough to come by. Because usually they're going with names or they're totally. Going, you know...
Because you would have been great in True West.
Yeah.
But they did Ethan Hawke and Paul Dano.
Which makes more sense.
Although... I mean, I didn't love Paul Dano in that role. He's one of my favorite film actors, but did not work on stage.
Isn't it interesting? It's one of my favorite things to go watch film actors on Broadway and be like, let's see how you do. Let's see how your chops are on stage. And sometimes they blow it out of the water.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's like, oh, you're struggling with this.
Yeah. Ethan Hawke was unbelievable.
Ethan Hawke's the shit, dude.
He was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah.
Paul Dano was a robot up there. Mm. Couldn't even, like, nothing. And and of course, next to Ethan Hawke, it got even worse, you know?
Yeah.
It was the same. I saw Burn This with Adam Driver. Adam Driver was unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, Tony nominated, just a great performance, but he was acting next to Keri Russell, who I love in movies.
Uh-huh.
And she was terrible.
I saw, so interesting. I saw Michelle Williams and Jeff Daniels in Blackbird, and now half the people I talked to said that Michelle Williams was terrible.
Oh.
And I was like, you're wrong.
Yeah.
It was one of the best performances I've ever seen in my entire life.
You just didn't get there. You just didn't get it.
I think that she's... Mm-hmm. So I spent the first like 15... And I know why people thought it was bad. Mm. She was doing this character, and I spent the first 15 minutes of the play going, is she bad? Because like it was really weird. She was like speaking in this weird way, and like her posture was like really weird. And I was like, is she bad on stage? Is she doing a bad job? And then I was like, oh, this is...
Once you locked into the
play. She's portraying this person who has an emotional trauma that has sort of locked her in a state where she's in a like an arrested development state with this guy in particular. And so she's acting like a shy 13-year-old girl in a 32-year-old girl's body.
Incredible.
And it was... Once I got that, I was like, oh, she's... Yeah, amazing.
Which
amazing.
Is why we need to, as actors, be better at not watching actors and better at watching acting.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
A lot of times we go in and it's like, oh, it's Michelle Williams. Here we go. It's like, no, it's not. This is a play that was written by a playwright about characters. Like, let's watch the acting.
I love that. Watch acting, not actors.
Dude,
yeah.
And it took a while because we're obsessed with actors. That's the thing. People just love... pretty people or like good talented people, right? It's the whole Benedict Cumberbatch thing. It's like, but if we can't enjoy the story more than we do the human being, there's no way. We're now watching a celebrity. You know, it's anyway.
Okay, so Broadway.
Broadway.
Broadway. How does this happen for you? You're doing a show on HGTV?
Like a Food Network show.
Yeah, let's go back there. You have a show on TV.
Yeah.
This is like the first big thing where when I met you, you were running a company called Warboy.
Warboy Theater Projects.
Oh, really cool.
Some of the best stuff.
Found space, the kind of stuff that I'm really into, the kind of stuff that really like cooks my waffle and like gets me like excited. And I remember you telling me about it and I was like, ooh, that's my jam right there.
Dude.
And then I hadn't seen you in a while. I was maybe in New York and you were out in LA. And then I saw you had this like show and I was like, oh my God, he's got like his own show.
Crazy.
And so how did that happen? And then,
So here's, and this is like the best formula in my opinion. We moved to San Francisco. So After my undergrad, I was like, I don't know what to do. I'm not going to do shows at the Hale my whole life. You know what I mean? Like in Orem, Hale is a theater in Orem, just a community theater. I've got to like pursue this career. No one had told me how to pursue this career ever. Like not a single person had told me. I don't know why we're keeping that a secret though. for some reason.
Yeah.
Like, to this day. But
your acting coaches are listening to this podcast right now like, oh,
this guy is...
I didn't tell you.
No, the thing is I learned how to act, or at least as much as I could at that time, you know. Like, but like how to like do the thing, like get out into the world.
Yeah.
No one really told me.
We are so business illiterate.
It's crazy, which is like literally the opposite of what we need.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Anyway, so I applied to like 150 theaters. I'm not even joking. In the US. And I got one response and one offer to work at a theater. It happened to be the Guthrie in Minneapolis, which is like the biggest regional theater in the U.S.
Ain't bad. Ain't not bad. If you put out, if you go to a, you know, you go to a 150 auditions and you book an HBO show, ain't bad. Ain't bad.
That's, hey, yeah. That's your story, by the way. You just told your story, so you didn't mean to, but you
that
did.
Is how New York went for me.
Yeah, there it is. Anyway, so I went to the Guthrie. I met this director named Ron Melrose. I got an associate directing internship at the Cutting Ball Theater in San Francisco, right down the street from ACT. Really great job, and great theater. They were doing experimental work, so I got to do things that I, you know, didn't understand, and it was awesome. Met a lot of amazing people. I got paid $1,000 that year. I lived in the most expensive city in the U.S., which is San Francisco, and I was paid $1,000.
How did you do that?
To work at the theater.
How did you do that as a married jobs. Man with...
Crazy.
Did you have kids at this
time?
I had
one kid. We had one kid. We lived in the corner of someone's house. We didn't even have a kitchen. We had a little like hot plate that we would cook ramen noodles on, things like that. Janessa Goodness. Was unbelievable. It was the toughest year of our life so far, for sure.
Yeah.
Which... Again, we are lucky that was the toughest year because it really wasn't that bad, you know? But because of that experience, when I went out there, I reached out to a few agents and said, hey, I'm an actor. I have some stuff under my belt. Are you interested? I went to a couple meetings and I got an agent, Stars Talent Agency or something like
that. Yeah.
They would get me auditions here and there. I started booking some things. You know, I was fairly unique out there, I think. You know, I wasn't the typical Bay Area-ite. You know, yeah. I was really good at making fun of myself. You know, there was nothing sort of uppity about me.
Well, you talked earlier about, like, getting over wanting to be Tom Hardy and, like, accepting type. I think accepting type is, like, I've never really struggled with it. I had a hard time figuring out who I was, what my type was. But once... I sort of figured out that, like, my mustache helps make me not just another white guy, and, like, having, like, some things, like, having some, like, quirks helps make me not just another, like, white guy trying to be, like, a hot six-pack white guy. I'm like, oh, I actually can do better just sort of, like, embracing this character edge. And, yeah, you just get over the fact that you're, like, in Hollywood, I'm not hot. Like, my partner thinks I'm hot, and, like, you know, but, like... Yeah. In Hollywood, I'm not hot. And that's fine. And that's good. That, you know.
I'm totally with you. Embracing that is huge. Yeah. It's definitely weird because I embrace my character work. I never thought going to Book of Mormon that I was going to play Elder Price. I mean, no one asked me to, you know. But I definitely know who I am. There is that. I think it's more of a desire to do drama. It's because emotionally, I think... In that dramatic sense, I want my voice to be as low as possible. I want to dig deep and have those roles.
Oh, I want a six-pack.
Yeah.
I want a six-pack really
That's
bad.
Possible. It is possible.
I know it's in the realm of possibility. I know it's like one of those things that like...
How long is it? Yeah.
But will it ever happen?
Right. You have to be so determined. I always say, though, I'm like, man, if somebody offered me a role in a superhero movie, I would absolutely get
Oh, that's how it, that's the Easy. Only way it's ever going to happen. That's the only way it's ever going to happen.
How it worked for Chris Pratt.
Is if I'm getting paid millions of dollars to get a six-pack. Exactly. That's the only way.
So if anyone out there has $1 million...
To give me to get abs, I will.
Please do.
Anyway, so
San Francisco, hardest year of my life. Literally a month before we were going to move back to Utah and just give it all up for good.
Yeah.
You know, or probably not give it up. I don't know. But try and pivot. Pursue another. Maybe, yeah, pivot.
Go
maybe,
a different direction.
Maybe teach. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which I didn't want to do, but
pick
it was
War
like,
Boy back up and
at least
do,
we're gonna
do a couple
do
shows a year. And,
yeah, exactly. I booked California Dream Eater. I booked that show.
Yeah.
I walked into an audition and they put some food in front of me and they said, hey, eat this food, tell us about it, and make us laugh. That was the audition.
Amazing.
I found out I booked it. We shot a pilot for $1,500. I moved back to Utah after that pilot was shot. I found out like 3 months later, they offered me $100,000. And you can imagine at that time.
You're like, I made $1,000 last year.
We were $17,000 in debt.
Oh my
from
God.
From San Francisco, which there was no other way.
Wow.
And we were coming back going, well, I guess we're going to pay off our credit cards.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But like the lesson, the other thing is while I was there, I understudied a couple roles at Berkeley Rep, which was huge for me. And the one that I did One Man, Two Governors. I understudied Francis.
Perfect.
David Ivers did it. Yeah. Right? David Ivers, yeah.
Perfect for you.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, Berkeley Rep is also huge. So as an actor, huge. It was like, oh, side gigs, come in, you know, work on the thing, get to play the role. Like, this is awesome. You know, these are big roles.
You're living the dream. First of all, even that job of going around and eating things at different places, you know how many people's dream job that is? Like, everyone, like, wants abs to happen magically, but what we all know we could if given the opportunity, is just eating food at places and going, yes, please, this good. Like, but
which is pretty much the extent of what I did.
And you don't even need to pay me $100,000 to do it.
Right.
If you were like, I'll pay you $10,000 for 10 episodes, I'd be like, you're so generous. 100%. Let's do it.
Yeah, I would do it for the free food, but fine. Yeah, yes.
Let's do it.
No, for sure. No, dream job. Just incredible. Uh-huh. What's so interesting is doing a dream job like that and thinking the entire time that I want to be Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
What an interesting thing, because I look back at all the memories and it was one of the best times. Unbelievable to just literally travel Northern California up to Yosemite, all these places, eat at the most fancy, best restaurants in the areas, and just shoot episodes, meet incredible people. Like, that was my job.
And be doing sweet theater gigs on the side.
And the whole time I was thinking, gosh, I want to be in Mindhunter. You know what I mean, though? Isn't that so interesting? Yeah, what a really dumb, idiotic thing to be thinking. I mean, it's so weird. Anyway, because of that Berkeley Rep job, by the way, that's how I got Book of Mormon.
Okay.
Every good thing that has happened in my life, here is the message to all the listeners.
Yeah.
Every good thing that has happened in my life has happened because of that one miserable year in San Francisco. When it comes to my career, obviously my family is the best thing, but
yeah.
All of the good things that have happened in my career happened from that one very uncomfortable year. So if there were anything that I can live by, it is go be uncomfortable. Something will work out.
Put yourself out there.
You have to be uncomfortable, though.
And you still do that. But you still are writing emails, reaching out.
Dude.
The way that we set this up is like you reached out to me and just said, hey, are you around? Like, I'm in town. What are you doing? I'm hungry to do something. And I feel like you're always just putting out feelers. And thank God for people like you, because that's how I work, is people is people reaching out.
And we are.
Out.
We're gonna shoot your piece, and we're going to make it. You know, we're going to...
Is this how you're telling me?
You are the next Judd Apatow. It's happening right now.
Is this... Are you... Did you guys have the meeting?
This is my gift to you. We had the meeting. Yeah, we are going to shoot it. Yeah.
We didn't even talk about this before we recorded. We'll talk about it after.
I know. I was wondering when you were going to bring it up, but...
I guess on the air. On the air.
The thing is, though, we were never not going to shoot it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I owe that much to you. You know what I mean? For just being...
I don't think you owe me jack shit. But I... Well, but God,
that's,
I...
There, that's probably my problem, then.
But no.
I feel that way.
Actually, keep thinking that. no, I... Chase, thank you.
Dude.
That's so exciting. We'll talk more after we are done with this.
Dealing with this thing.
That's really exciting. Discomfort. I did a whole episode about sitting in discomfort, too.
Yeah.
Because that's a big thing for me to learn in sobriety, is that, like... The reason why I drink is because I don't like being uncomfortable. And what things that make me uncomfortable, like, honestly, these last 2 years of my life have been like the most go-getter-ish of my career. Like, I've actually been like putting myself out there in ways that I used to not, because...
Is it working?
Like,
you're shooting a movie right now. But.
Yeah, you know, yeah, actually, yeah. Like, I'm showing up for way more like self-tapes and auditions than I normally do. I get very defeatist sometimes, where I'll just get in like a hole where like I don't respond to like self-tape requests for like 6 months. I'm just kind of like, I never get the part anyway, so what's the point? I'm not wasting my time.
Dude, I'm so glad you said that, because like, one thing about being on Broadway or like nailing it and getting somewhere big is that you think that like it's all solved for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I sat down, I was like, oh, so can I go take a rest then? Can I stop hustling for a second? And the truth is, it's no. The answer is no.
No.
I have been sending in guest stars in LA for the past like 2 months.
Yeah.
And
you're gonna get something.
Haven't gotten a single call back.
Yeah.
I'm not hearing a single thing. So I'm like, right, as actors, we start to internalize. I'm like, what do I do? What's the, maybe I just, okay, maybe I'm not right for these things. You know, I'm not booking them. but this is the game. You know, that's the game. And the challenge is so exciting of like being bad at this.
You
know
yeah, it's I mean? if you can get excited about the numbers game, and if you can be like, but what it takes too is to have a little streak. When you get a little streak like you had, like the show, the Berkeley show, Broadway, you get on a little hot streak, it sort of makes you feel like, cool, I can actually accept a few losses right now. It's cool if I get rejected 20 times in a row right now because I'm on a little streak, which means I got
to
just...
You know that was 6 years, though.
Yeah.
From Berkeley Rep to Broadway, 6 years.
Really? So who in Berkeley Rep connected you to the Broadway show?
Someone... I have no idea, actually, to be honest with you. Someone had worked on the show or knew about the show, reached out to my manager, and here we are.
Work begets work. That's always great when work begets work.
Totally.
And again, if you're a great guy like you are, which that's the thing too, is like you like here's why people like working with you, Chase, is A, you're really, really talented and you're just like such a hard worker, but you're also just one of the nicest guys around. So no one works with you and goes like, oh, Chase Ramsey's an asshole. Like, never again with that guy. You know, like, I have a hard time imagining have a hard time imagining you losing your cool or being, like, frustrated and, like, and getting in an argument with someone. Like, I don't know.
True. I feel like there's somebody that's going to listen to this and be like, I have the opposite experience of you.
Well, sure.
Other than with, I own a production company down here and I've lost my cool with them before, but it's because I love them, because they're family.
That's what happens, the closer you are.
Yeah, totally. And I feel like it's a safe space to like voice my insecurities and my, and it all is insecurities. It's fear. It's all of that. However, I am doing this because like I love the thing. And so it feels like reaching out to you and seeing if you have anything. I echo what you said to me. It's like, I just want to be around people that I know are not only doing great, challenging work, but also that I can just chill with. Someone said that to me early on. Because I was going out for, Utah Shakespeare Festival. Uh-huh. This was when I wasn't really ready to do it.
Yeah.
But I was like, man, I don't know if I'm good enough to do Utah Shakespeare Festival. Uh-huh. And Kim Mellon, my friend, said, I don't think it matters if you're good enough. It matters if they want to have coffee with you.
Yeah.
You know, and like over time, that has been proven to be true.
Go in and just and be a guy that they're like, oh, he's a cool guy. Even if we don't have anything for him right now, we might want to see him again.
Exactly.
Next year.
Yeah.
We might, you know, like yeah.
All this rule applies if you're a good actor, of course. Like we do have to have a bit.
You gotta have chops.
You have to work for it. You know all that stuff. Yeah. But once you're there, then the edge is sort of like, oh well, do we want to work with this person? If they can accomplish this role and we want to work with them, gosh.
I have to remember that with places like Pioneer Theater and stuff, where I'm like, I'll go like a year and a half without working there after like a streak, and I'll be like, oh, maybe they don't like me anymore. And then it's like, no, idiot. Like they just don't have anything for you right now. Like,
also,
it's fine.
Also, what if they think that you're too big for them now? What if they think you're not interested in coming back?
She said that a couple times. She's been like, don't come back here anymore. Like, she'll say that. She'll be like, stop coming back here. Or she'll say, like, only come back here to work for me. And I'll be like, all right.
This
like,
is Karen Asenberg.
Yeah. But I'm like, and it's one of those things where I'm like, that's really sweet, and that's really nice, and that's cool. But also, like, when I'm not working, I would love to come work for you.
I need money.
Please hire me.
Finances
are a thing. Yeah, I will happily come, you know. And they're one of my favorite places to work.
Yeah, totally. But, which is so sad right now, because nothing's really happening.
Nothing's happening.
Nothing good is happening on stage.
Yeah.
I'm starving for it.
I
need attention so bad.
I know.
I didn't do this thing for you. I actually did it because I need people to hear my voice.
Oh, that's why it's great to ask actors to do it. They'll always say yes. Actors will never say no to the question, do you want to be on my podcast?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. That's incredible.
But
oh, I hate us.
People usually don't say no. Other people who aren't actors are usually like, well, what are we talking about? Like, what are we doing?
Honestly, we would have had this conversation outside of the podcast anyway at some point. So it's great that we're just getting it out there. You know, maybe there's a few things we talk about.
Okay, I need to hear though. Yeah. So we've been going slowly and I keep interrupting.
I'm so
you.
Sorry.
No, it's my fault. I need to hear the story of the audition, because just because for my own like fantasy, like porn of it, because like I just, it's like, I've played out the fantasy so many times in my head of like getting a call from my agent that I booked Broadway, and like the feeling. I wonder if, did you have that feeling, or were you like a Broadway, or did you not care? Were you just like, oh cool, like.
You're gonna hate this, dude.
I know I'm gonna hate it. I knew this would be your answer too. But tell me the story anyway.
The truth is that I don't actually think that I'm good enough to have the elation. I don't think that I was ever good enough at theater, at musical theater, to know that it was my destiny. You know what I mean? To like foresee it, and then when it happened, be elated.
Sure.
When I got the call, we were...
Where'd you audition? In LA or New York?
New York.
Okay.
I went and met with them in New York, yeah. Yeah. And when we got the call that it was happening... And see, the thing is that Book of Mormon has multiple shows. Australia, London, not anymore.
The tours.
It doesn't exist. The tours, all of that.
Yeah.
I could have gone anywhere.
Sure.
Broadway was the place that I want to be. Broadway is the place that everyone wants to be.
Of course.
It's where it happens.
Yeah.
And so I think that for me it was like, well, honestly, Janessa and I, not even joking, when we got the call, I think we were talking about, and maybe it was a defense mechanism.
Sure.
But we were literally talking about, we're not going to do this.
Yeah.
Like, that was fun. Like, I'm glad we, because she came out on the trip with me. And, you know, she was literally outside the audition room when I went in and met with them and came out, and we went and saw a show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like... Man, I like feel like I'm gonna cry because it was just so cool to have her around, and like that was really it. Is that like me and my best friend were out here like in these cool rooms with these great people, and it didn't at all feel like, oh, we're gonna do Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
What it felt like was, whoa, this is funny.
Yeah.
This script is funny, and like I'm just gonna show up and...
Had you seen the show or heard the show?
Never seen the show. The only song
How dare you, Chase? How dare you come on my podcast and tell me you had never listened to the Book of Mormon?
What was I thinking? Especially because now I am the biggest... It's so brilliant.
It's an incredible show.
It's unbelievable.
I've seen it 3 times and I've laughed my... I've almost shit my pants laughing all 3 times that I saw it. And that was after listening to the soundtrack probably 40 times.
Oh my gosh.
So, yeah.
I didn't even know Cunningham's character. The only thing that was that opening line, hello, would you like to change religions? I have a free book written by Jesus.
Uh-huh.
That's it.
Yeah.
Other than that, I knew, I believe.
Didn't you know that, like, Josh Gad was Josh Gad because of that?
I mean, like, I knew his career trajectory. At that time, though, I was so focused on trying to figure it out for myself that it didn't even cross my mind. In fact, I didn't even go in there going, oh, I'm totally a Cunningham.
Yeah.
I went into the audition with the material, literally just playing it the way that I saw it.
I've always wanted to do McKinley. That's what I always wanted to do.
Oh, you'd be great.
Yeah.
In fact, you'd be a fantastic McKinley.
Yeah. I told them that when I went in for Cunningham. I was like, honestly, if you want to see me for McKinley, I think I'd do better. And they were like, nah.
Do you remember who you auditioned for?
I don't. No.
Dang it.
Yeah.
I wish I knew. I'm sure it's the people.
Yeah. I don't remember, yeah.
But when we got the call about Broadway,
uh-huh.
It was... And this is probably being a dad.
Yeah.
It was literally, oh my gosh, we have to say yes, don't we? We're going to move to New York.
Where are we going to live?
Holy crap.
We're moving
to New York City.
Yeah.
Like, that was more the moment. And it was looking Janessa in the eyes and like having that adult moment of like, we're gonna do this.
Oh my God, like, what? Or were you both just like, I guess we're going to New York?
I really don't think that we had a celebration. I don't think we did. Isn't that insane?
Let's cheers to you being on Broadway. Cheers me with your Monster Energy drink.
Oh my gosh.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's celebrate your Broadway contract.
This is the most that we've
celebrated. 2 years later.
But then I see, it's funny, I see all of my friends.
Oh, what is it, 3 years? How long have you been doing it?
I did it for 2 years.
Two years. Little mission.
Hey.
Ooh. I forgot there was a dog.
There's a dog here.
Oh, hi.
Oh, hi, bud.
Hi, buddy.
She might need to go out. But I see all my friends, like, this is my 1 year anniversary on Broadway, like, this is when my life changed and all of that stuff. And it could have been because my life had already, like, taken place, that it was then just like, okay, I have to do this really hard role. I haven't done theater in like 5 years. Like,
yeah,
this is serious. I didn't have time to like celebrate the win. Oh, the family's here.
Yeah.
Here they come. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
I know. I'm so sorry. That makes me such an a-hole, dude. Like, I get Broadway and I'm like, oh, great. I have to go to Broadway.
No, but that's... You know how many times I've heard that story, though? You know how many times I've heard the story of, like, people getting something that I've thought about getting for my entire life, and they're like, yeah, I was actually kind of like... I was like, oh, man, I don't know if I want to do that. And I'm like, what? Like, I did a movie with Ty Sheridan, and he... I was talking to him at lunch one day, and he was like... telling me about how his career started. You know who that is? He's the kid who's the lead in Ready Player One, and he's like the new Cyclops and X-Men and stuff.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, and we're at lunch one day, and he was telling me about how his career started, and he was like 7 years old in class, and these casting directors came in who were casting for a movie called Tree of Life, a Terrence Malick movie with Brad Pitt and Jessica Chastain. And they picked him out of class to be in this movie.
Oh, my gosh.
And then the producers on that movie put him in a movie called Mud with Matthew McConaughey that was a big hit. And then he just, like, had this career for, like, no reason. Like, he just, like, had an acting career in the movies. And then he was telling me, and he's, like, 22 when he was telling me this. He's like, you know, though, like, I'm really starting to enjoy it. And I was like... well, I hope you are. I was like...
oh, you like being a millionaire?
I was like, is it fun?
In these great movies?
Is it fun starring in a Steven Spielberg movie and making $15 million? Like, I hope it was.
See, and on top of that, it's like, because you know just as much as I do, we hardly get good material across our desk.
Yeah,
you know what I
mean?
Like, it's not like people are sending us scripts.
No.
Like, we have good careers, but I haven't seen a good script ever other than an independent film.
Right.
Like, I truly have... I'm not reading...
Film, it's so rare.
I'm not reading Mud and then going, oh yeah, I think I'd like to do this. No, what's happening is that we're getting a Law & Order SVU script that has three lines where someone comes up and says, where's your friend? Oh, my friend's over there. Oh, because they're in trouble. Oh, I know nothing about that. That's the scene.
You know? That's the scene.
So that's... for him to be getting these scripts... right up front, it's
and not
like,
knowing the gravity of them.
Gosh dang.
It's like if someone got Broadway and they like didn't know
the gravity of it. Well, now, dude, I'm this equity actor that can't really act, and you know, there's not a lot of film stuff for me. I'm not fat, I'm not skinny, so I'm kind of nothing, which I've heard before, by the way.
No.
Been told that before?
You've been told that?
Oh, heck yeah.
Like, you either need to lose 30 pounds or gain 30 pounds.
You're not fat,
yeah.
You're not skinny, so you're kind of nothing.
You kind of
like, where do we put you?
That's how I feel. I feel like my body type is like, they're like, you either need to like try to get jacked, or you need to like...
No, but you have that Paul Dano edge to you. Like, the way that you... there is, like, an edge to you. If you look at my face right now, it is the most gentle, ambiguous face ever. You're not...
I think you're so castable. I think you're so castable. I think you're...
I need you to tell people that. I need you to get that out there.
I don't think you need my help, Chase. I think you're good.
It's been fine. Now that I've heard that Broadway is extended, I'm a little nervous. I'm like, when is this going to happen, man? What's next for me? You know, it's scary. However... the cool thing about this is everybody's in the same playing ground right now. All the big Broadway stars, a lot of movies, people are out of work. Like, that's kind of it's a cool time to be in the industry. I've been lucky to have consistent work for like 7 years. That's rare. Now I have nothing. And so I get to go back to the drawing board.
Nothing's a big, is an interesting way to say it. Again, so the hustle for you and I never stops. And you're like me in this regard, Chase. I always say I'm doing nothing when I'm doing eight things. And I always I always tell people, if I'm not doing anything big, then then I'm doing nothing. If I'm not...
That's okay.
Yeah. If I'm not making like big money, then I'm just doing nothing. But then it's like, well, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm doing like two plays and like I'm got an album coming out, like I like have a podcast. People are like, so you're not doing nothing.
No, it's totally true. You know, maybe the other thing behind that I'm feeling right now is that I want to do the stuff that you're getting to do right now. And instead, I'm getting cast in the same stuff that I was doing before. I want to use this as a time to reset and, like, do movies. I just want to act.
Uh-huh.
I've realized that I'm an actor. People want me to be an actor. And so it's like, maybe that's what it is. It's like a lot of the stuff that I'm doing is just the hustle. It's not the actual love for the game.
Let's go through what you're doing right now, though. You've got a show that you wrote the book for that's open at a theater here in Utah.
Crazy.
That you wrote a musical that you wrote
the
book for.
At the Hale, which is so awesome.
Did you direct the show too?
I directed it.
You directed the show as well. Yeah. You're shooting a series that in New York that they sent you the camera equipment to shoot for, like a sketch series.
So crazy. I just sent it back. Yeah.
Yeah. So you're insane. So how dare you say nothing?
I'm also, dude, one of the things I'm most excited about, I'm writing a show called Blockbusters.
Okay.
It's a 90s musical with Michael Patrick Walker, who wrote Altar Boys.
Sounds like you got nothing going on.
Dude, that's gonna be so sick though. It's so funny. That's gonna be a great project.
I love that title.
And then we're shooting this kid's scene, you know, that he wrote. His name's Austin Archer. we're actually wanting to, and maybe this will help as well. I don't know if we're gonna spend any money. We're literally gonna do it like on almost nothing budget.
Yeah, just get the proof of concept done.
We're gonna shoot a movie in November, like a feature. We're just gonna shoot something
amazing.
We have some concepts that take nothing, and
yeah,
you know, we'll pay crew and try and pay actors what we can,
sure,
and stuff like that. But
sure,
just to get something up, you
yeah
know? So
yeah,
that would be awesome.
You know, that stuff though. Again, I love that you said at the beginning that your love language is like achievement and like getting like acknowledgement for, because what's interesting is I'm the same way. Which is why it doesn't feel like I'm doing anything unless I'm doing something that everyone can see that's like big, that I'm getting like it's, there's a big audience that's like giving me lots of like encouragement and lots of validation and like, and other artists agree that what I'm doing is like a big deal. And like, you know, but when I'm doing that stuff that's like my self-made stuff, when I'm making my podcast, when I'm working on music, when I'm doing small independent theater with my friends, in the doing of it, I feel so fulfilled. I feel so connected to my purpose and my calling.
Totally.
And the result doesn't matter. So I'm doing a podcast tomorrow with another actor friend about expectations and about learning to be like, it's not the accolades and the cheers from the audience and the acknowledgement from everyone else that what I'm doing is important. It's the experience of making a movie just for the sake of making it with my friends. I've been on this kick of like making music videos with my friends because I'm just like, it's fun.
Yeah.
And it costs me money and time and I don't make anything on
totally
them.
Totally.
But it's
exactly,
it's fulfilling. It's
yes
exciting to plot out an idea, talk with my friend who has the camera, get a whole shot list down, you know, have pre-production meetings, get in there, shoot it, go through the editing process and like finish a thing. And go like, we went boom, boom, boom. And we had the idea and we actually did it. And it doesn't matter if it goes viral or blows up. Like,
totally.
I obviously always want it to.
Yeah, it would help.
But,
yeah, but that's not like the thing.
Yeah. You got an album coming out as well.
I think I have an album coming
yeah
out.
Yeah.
The band's called Wolfie.
Uh-huh.
It's just two of us. And really, it's meant to be... It's meant to just be a party album. It's meant to make people happy. You know, I think going into COVID, it was like, man, what the heck is this?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
I
yeah
can't comprehend it. Let's just write an album that would make us jump up and down or bop our heads in our car, right? And with that came a little bit of nostalgia. We like just started writing some like late 2000s type stuff.
Uh-huh.
You know what I mean? And that's just what came out.
How long have you played drums? I didn't know you played drums.
Yeah, my whole life, actually.
What?
Yeah, multiple bands. My whole... I know, dude.
What is this?
I mean, we're
this
like...
This is why I had to ask, who are you?
We're like best friends, but we don't know each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I think that's what it is.
I think we did that show together at Slack, and I think we just respected each other a lot. And so it's just kind of stayed in this, like, mutual admiration society.
Yeah.
But I was coming down here, I was like, I need to, like, ask this guy, like... what his deal is, like who he, like what he, I didn't know you played drums. That's incredible,
dude. I can't wait for you to hear the album. If I had to plug anything though, can I plug something?
Of course.
My friend Austin Archer just came out with an album. If you haven't listened to it, you need to listen to it. I listened to the whole thing. Life changing. get on it.
I trust me, the people pleaser listeners are well aware that there, that there
we've
is.
We talked about it a few
they
times.
They are well aware that there is an album out. And if they aren't by now, if there's people listening because they're Chase Ramsey fans, then yeah, get on that.
Oh, gosh.
And then check out the Wolfie album.
Oh, dude. So what's cool the album called? Making music, man.
Oh, it's.
Say it again.
What's the Wolfie album called again?
Loserville.
Oh, I don't know if you said that. That's awesome.
Yeah, I mean, we're a couple of just like chubby kids that love music, you know, and like in that sense, like whatever the old idea of what a loser is, and of course we have a president who uses that word a lot.
Uh-huh.
We're like, dude, that's what we are then.
Yeah.
We're losers. Who else is a loser? Come and join us.
All right,
you know what
I
mean? That's sort of the vibe of the thing.
Yeah, I love it. I love that so much.
It's cool, man.
Okay, just really quick before we finish.
I can't believe you've made it this far, man. I can see you're fading.
But I'm going to go. I don't know what I'm going to do today, Chase. I don't know if I'm going to go home and sleep or if I'm going to drink.
Honestly, I don't know if you're going to make it out of this room based on your eyes right now.
I might have to go to your couch and take a little pow-pow.
Totally.
But I just want to know that, like, just for my own, like, well-being, I just want to know that, like, occasionally when backstage, waiting to go on in the wings of, what's the theater that you perform in? The Eugene O'Neill Theater. That every once in a while you just go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Like, I just want to know that. It does happen, right? Occasionally, small moments where you...
Once I had a show, it was like 5 shows in.
Uh-huh.
And I felt like, oh my gosh, I think I kind of almost got it.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had a semblance. Because still to this day, I don't think I have figured it out. It's so hard.
How many shows have you done?
And it's incredible.
Do you know?
I don't know.
Do you think it's lots. More than... So hold on, 8 shows a week, you did 2 years, 52 weeks a year, you probably took some time off, sometimes you had an understudy, I'm sure, or did you ever miss a show?
So, no. Yeah. So I am a standby.
Oh, okay.
My job is to be at the show at all times, but
right.
I only go on when Cody doesn't do the show.
Oh, okay.
Cody, who's doing the show right now, has done the show for 8 years, like, or 7 years, or because it's an 8-year-old show.
I remember meeting people who have been on Lion King since it opened.
Dude,
this is the first show I ever saw on Broadway in 1998, 99.
Oh, because we still had original cast members.
Yeah,
Cody, who plays it full time, born to do it.
Yeah,
I mean, literally came out of the womb being Cunningham.
Yeah,
maybe even better than Josh Gad. Unbelievable. Like, watching him was just a true privilege.
So many shows do you think you did? Like 60?
100? Yeah, probably more than that. I mean, because he's done it so long, there were just a lot of days off.
Yeah, where he's like, I'm good.
Plenty of let's just say I did enough.
Oh, I think the longest runs I've ever done in my life were like when I would do Saturday's Voyeur.
Yeah.
And we would do like 40 shows.
That's an interesting thought.
It feels eternal.
Totally.
It feels... 40 shows is so many shows. So doing anything in like excess of like 100 shows
is a lot. It's a
lot. Groundhog Day doesn't even begin to cut it. Like
totally.
Yeah.
Totally. But being a standby is a really interesting thing because
that is a very interesting
job. You're getting paid and billed as the lead of the show. You know what I mean? Because a standby, you have to be there at all times.
I'm one of those people who gets excited when standbys go in and when understudies go in.
Yeah.
Unless it's like a major celebrity that I was there to see.
It's like,
and they're out.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Yeah.
I need to see him.
But I get excited when understudies go in because I know that those people are like hungry in the wings and are like going to come out and be like, just so you know, we're all this good.
Totally.
Like, being an understudy on Broadway does not mean that I am a step below the person that I'm covering.
Oh, and truly, like, being around other standbys.
Yeah,
and
understudy
is a completely different
job. Different thing. Sorry, standby. Yeah.
But, like, literally the only role that I know in the show is Cunningham.
Yeah.
I don't learn any other roles. I don't step in for anything else ever.
Right.
It's like, you have to be as good.
Yeah.
Like, you have to be. Cody got in early, and so here he is years later, also just, like, perfect for the role. I have to go on stage and act every night. Cody can literally walk on stage as himself.
I honestly kind of think standby is, like, the job that I want, to be honest. I had lots of friends who were doing it when I was living there, and I was like, that actually sounds like the one where it's, like, every time you get to go in, it's like really fun. Like you get to like tell people like I'm going in tonight. Like, and it's like it maybe it's been a couple weeks since you've been in, and like that night's just like a really great audience, and like you get to like, you know, it's like,
yeah,
and you don't get that like monotonous thing where you're just kind of like, I don't even know what's happening anymore.
That is a tricky thing of like of like phoning it in when you do it 8 times a week for sure. But in my case, having only done it however many times, I mean, still a lot, but you know, not as much as Cody, you know, not 7 years worth of a show. That's insane. I just feel like it never, being backstage, it always felt like, especially at the end of the play, when you do something so hard, like it truly is such a difficult role.
It's you have the whole
to
be show.
Funny. You have to sing as high as possible. You have to run 4 miles.
But every role in the show is insane.
Yeah, I mean,
it's insane.
Yeah, it's crazy. You don't. You're on stage for 95% of the time if you're Elder Price or Elder Cunningham. Mm-hmm. You know, like there are few roles that do this much. Elphaba and Wicked.
Yeah.
Harold Hill. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's a lot. So at the end of the show, like walking off stage. First of all, the thing that I loved is like I never felt like, wow, I just nailed it.
Yeah, I nailed it.
Even if the audience was up on their feet, even if they were laughing the whole time, which the writing's so good, I could go up there and poo my pants and they would laugh. You know what I mean? It's like so good.
Yeah.
But I think it is, it's like that, I can't believe that I'm doing this really hard thing on this huge page. Back to what you said before, of course I had those moments.
Yeah.
Constantly. Yeah. Of like, holy crap, that was Broadway that I just did.
You know the people who have acted on that stage?
Yeah, totally.
At the Eugene O'Neill Theater?
Oh my gosh.
Like, you know, like the air that you're sharing? Like with the, you know, like that, I mean, it's...
All of that stuff, there's no way to ignore it. No question that I see the outcome.
It's like being a standby for the Yankees, and you're like, yeah, I go in every once in a while. It's like, yeah, you play at Yankee Stadium.
Yeah.
Like you go in and like you play left field. And like, you know, but yeah, in your case, you're like the pitcher. You're like, I go in and I have to pitch the whole game every once in a while. Like, but it's like, that's crazy, man. Like Babe Ruth played there. Like, I don't know if he played in the new one, but
and I have to say, I mean, I don't know if I could be the main person. I don't know if I could be Cunningham full time.
That's why I'm like standby is the job, dude.
Well, for sure there are amazing perks to what we do. I mean, it's an incredible job. Sundays, I can watch Sunday night football. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A lot of times I can. So standby was perfect for me, but I can see how some people are like, I have to get down there. I have to do it. The one thing about playing such a difficult role, which is only the most difficult roles have standbys on Broadway, because a standby is only needed to be in the building if there's a chance that someone can go out mid-show,
which happens
because it's so hard. I didn't need to do it every night because doing it once a week was hard enough.
Sure.
With this role, you know what I mean, sort of thing. But we'll see if one day I ever step into this one or whatnot.
I saw it in New York, then I saw it a couple years later in Salt Lake, the tour, and I almost liked that tour better than the one I saw in New York. I saw Gavin Creel and I can't remember who else. Wasn't crazy about Gavin Creel.
It was Gavin and you probably saw Chris?
I don't know, but I didn't hate it. It was excellent. It was my first time seeing it.
Sure,
I loved it.
Of course.
But the one that I saw in Salt Lake, I was like, I think that like being in Salt Lake kind of hyped them up. I think that they were like,
hyped. I hear it's the best audience.
Oh,
yeah.
It's great. The energy in the room. Then I saw it in Los Angeles, and the Los Angeles crowd wasn't really giving them a lot.
Mm.
And they seemed a little bit like, I saw some like phoning it in. And it was my girlfriend's first time seeing the show, and she was kind of bummed out because she even noticed it. And I wasn't mad. I was like, it was still great. It was excellent. And
it's definitely bizarre going, you know, like doing a week of shows, because I did weeks, you know, for sure. Did full weeks and everything. I think the most bizarre thing is like getting a Wednesday night and people are rolling on the ground throwing up because they are so laughing so hard.
Yeah.
And then you get to a Thursday and they're liking it, but they're just laughing every once in a while.
people don't understand that. People don't. People who don't do theater don't understand that, like, these micro adjustments in the character. Group energy, mm-hmm. It's a whole different thing. It's a, you know.
The one thing about Broadway I noticed is that a lot of these people had done it so often. Mm-hmm. Most of these people have done it their, you know, the majority of their lives, actually.
Yeah.
They just push through. They don't even, you know what I mean? I'll be like, wow, they're quiet out there. Yeah. Yeah, you know. Yeah,
yeah, so what?
Yeah, like, let's just go. Like, uh-huh. Let's do the play.
Oh, that's what you always do. I'm still getting a paycheck. They're quiet? Yeah, let's go. Let's pick up your cues. Yeah. Like, let's just, like, we'll hit the big ones and we'll, you know,
totally.
And we won't do all the little mini ones, all the little, like, mini bits that you do when you have a really hot audience and you're like, totally. I'm doing mini bits on every single little teeny exactly. thing and they're laugh. Dying on everything. Mm-hmm. And now you're like, cool, I can skip all the little, I can just kind of roll through this, but
the one other thing I will say about Broadway, and there are definitely shows on Broadway, and I've heard this a lot from people in Utah, and sometimes I think it's an excuse to not have to go, not feel guilty about not going and trying.
Sure.
New York, but sometimes people say, like, the show, I went and saw a Broadway show and it wasn't as good as the Hale Center Theater or something like that, right? That's sort of like, we hear that a lot. We hear it a lot. And to be fair, I've seen some good stuff at the Hale. I've seen some great, you know, no question. But the truth is, in my experience, in Book of Mormon at least, and maybe it's because it's a really difficult show, everyone was listening every night. It truly never felt like anyone was, like, phoning it in.
Well, like I said, there's not a cakewalk role in the show. There's everyone has to have max energy,
yeah.
and in order to be funny and in order to be connected, you and in order to, like, get the energy that you need to do that show, you've got to find a way to be present.
You got
to
show up,
and you've got to find a way, and so
it just doesn't work without it, like you're saying.
Well,
so.
It's like anything else. Sometimes Broadway doesn't work. Like, sometimes, like, it's theater. Yeah. Like, yeah. I went and saw Christine Ebersole and Patti LuPone in War Paint, and I left at intermission.
Yeah,
right. I hated that show. It doesn't mean that Broadway's, like, bad.
Yeah.
It means that show had a lot of bad direction and, like, it
didn't work. That one didn't work, yeah.
And I was like, I'm watching two Broadway legends here. Mm-hmm. And I hated it. I left at intermission. I've never done that before. But I was like, I'm not staying. I was like, I don't need to see any more of this.
That's incredible. Yeah, man. Crazy.
Yeah, okay. Well, you know what? Your family's home, and I've taken way too much of your time.
I love it.
We've talked a lot about... We could talk forever about this stuff, and we probably will continue to when we're not recording. But I really appreciate you doing this and letting me get to know you a little bit better. You're such a... just inspiration to me with the motor that you work at. I aspire to find that ability to push through adversity and through discomfort and just, like, put myself out there more and stuff. I appreciate you so much for being one of those people who, like, facilitates and who reaches out and who gets the ball rolling, because I need those people.
Like I said before, I'm lucky to have really gifted friends around me. I only reached out to you because of you, not because of me, honestly. But okay, I accept all of that love.
Yeah, man. You're great, and I appreciate you doing this, this was fun.
Okay, so that was it. That was Chase Ramsey. I'm still in my car, still in the desert, still in Tickaboo. If you're from Utah and you're wondering, where the hell is Tickaboo? You're not alone. I grew up in Utah. I'd never heard of Tickaboo in my life. It's about 12 miles outside of Lake Powell. Beautiful, just a beautiful area. Southern Utah is just absolutely gorgeous if you've never been here. But you could be forgiven for, even if you spend a lot of time in Lake Powell, you could be forgiven for not knowing what Tickaboo is, because it's kind of like a rest stop on the side of the road as you're heading to Lake Powell. And the hotel we're staying at, you could honestly miss it if you weren't paying attention, because you're just in the middle of the desert. There's just nothing for miles, nothing and nothing but beautiful red rocks and canyons and amazing plateaus and great rock formations. And then all of a sudden there's just this resort, the Tickaboo Resort, on the side of the road. But you can totally miss it, 100%. And drive right on through to Bullfrog and to the edge of Lake Powell. But anyway, that's where we are. But how about Chase? He's a good guy, right? Sounds like a guy you'd want to be friends with, right? Well, he is. That's not an act. You should check out Chase. You should go follow him on Instagram. I think that his Instagram is Chase Ramsey Official. You should go check him out. He's always doing something. He's always scheming. And it's not just something. He's always doing like four or five somethings. And they're really interesting, and he's a funny guy. Yeah, you should go check him out. And if you haven't already, go listen to my new album. It's a good chance to check out the other stuff that I do in the biz. If you haven't already, go listen to Beautiful Things wherever you stream your music. And also, if you haven't already, consider purchasing the album through Bandcamp. I am raising money for suicide prevention. It's a good cause. And also, you can support independent music by doing that. If you like what I do here on the show, if you're a fan of People Pleaser, and if you're a fan of my stuff, it would mean a lot to me if you would go and support in that way and just show that you like what I'm trying to do. And that you want to show your support in that small way. I prefer people buy through Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. You can find out all the information at austin-archer.com or by looking up Austin Archer on wherever you stream music, Apple Music, Spotify. But if you want to purchase, don't go through iTunes. iTunes is bad. They don't give the artists any money. Go through Bandcamp, austinarchermusic.bandcamp.com. And then also, listen to Chrissy Bear's work on that album. Don't judge Chris based on the audio of this intro and this outro. I don't know how he's going to be able to do. I mean, I hope. I think that he'll be able to make it pretty clear. And I think that he does a great job on this show every week. My regular listeners are always telling me how professional and legit they think the show sounds. That's because Chris is such a great audio engineer, and he's so good at what he does. And you can use Chris for your audio project if you have something you're recording, a podcast or like a short story or a single, an album, an EP, something like that. Go to marmalademusicslc.com and use Chris for your audio project. Tell him that you listen to People Pleaser. Tell him that you're a big fan of his work on People Pleaser, and he'll give you 20% off your first project. So marmalademusicslc.com. Tell Chris that you listen to People Pleaser, and you get 20% off. How's that? Huh? How's that? I feel like a crazy person. I'm sitting in my car. It's pitch black outside. You got the sky out here, everyone. It's insane. It looks like a black napkin, and they dumped salt on the black napkin because the stars are so thick out here because there's no light pollution, and I just forget about it sometimes, but it is gorgeous out here. And I'm talking to myself in my car in the middle of a parking lot. That's it. That's the show. Thanks for listening. As always, really appreciate you. Love you. People Pleaser is written, edited, hosted, and produced by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music also by me. Obviously, I didn't write the song No Business Like Show Business, but, that goes without saying. I already plugged everything, so just be nice to each other and to yourselves, and that's it. Okay, love you so much. Have a good day now. See you next week. Goodbye.